The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third row seating, available dual wireless charging pads. You've got the H-Track all-wheel drive so you can take on those dirt trails and kick up some mud. Or the third row seating gets your whole family in to experience the thrill together. The dual wireless charging pads make sure that no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead cell phone. Think about those adventurous activities you can do, like me, taking a ski trip up with the family, maybe going on a camping expedition, anything and everything. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
Hello again. It's been too long. We've got an emergency podcast situation for you right here on the last day of April because Wake Forest needed all of 5 days to name the coach, to find the guy who's going to replace Danny Manning and Winston-Salem. Let's get to it right now.
Hey there, it's Gary Parrish. It's Thursday, April 30th, 2020. Welcome back to the CBS Sports Eye on College Basketball Podcast, where we sometimes discuss camel fighting and leaky black. Matt Norlander is here with me, and the Wake Forest job that opened Saturday has been filled. Steve Forbes is the Demon Deacons' new head coach. He just went 130-43 in five seasons at East Tennessee State, won two Southern Conference titles, never finished worse than third in his league, secured auto bids to the NCAA tournament twice, including this season. Some additional background for those unfamiliar. Steve Forbes is a 50-year-old Iowa native. Before landing the head coaching job at ETSU, he was an assistant for Greg Marshall at Wichita State, also worked at Texas A&M for Billy Gillespie, at Tennessee for Bruce Pearl, coached Northwest Florida State, a junior college, for 2 years before moving to Wichita State, went 62-6 in those two seasons. So in his past seven seasons as a head coach, Steve Forbes has gone 192-49. That's a winning percentage of 79.7. Not bad. Norlander, fair. Please provide your thoughts on Steve Forbes to Wake Forest.
Great hire. I was talking with a few folks over the weekend when this was all in its early stages, and I said then that if of the candidate pool that was known to be the case, and that was Steve Forbes, UNC Greensboro's Wes Miller, Winthrop's Pat Kelsey, Charleston's Earl Grant, and Ryan Odom of UMBC, Steve Forbes would have been my pick. I just find him to have been the most reasonable pick. We talked about it on a previous podcast. Oh yeah, three podcasts in a week time. It's like the season never ended. We're gonna have to take a little bit of break after this one, so enjoy this podcast, folks. Forbes would have been my pick because of his previous runs in power conferences, having navigated the recruiting landscape there, which, make no mistake about it, is different than when you are running a program at ETSU. Obviously has the gaudiest record. What wound up helping the search process, by the way, was the fact that, and this might have been out of somewhat out of necessity, but John Curry, every single candidate for the job was within driving distance. So if and when in-person interviews needed to be done, they could be done, albeit obviously we would have to hope and assume, in a social distancing appropriate kind of way. I had a source tell me that Forbes and Wes Miller were the two candidates that were afforded in-person opportunities, and Forbes, he gets it done. I assume you're with me, Parrish. This is the best. I mean, I don't know if there are really any bad options, but to me, Forbes made the most sense as the best option. You agree?
I do. I love it. More than anything, I'm just happy for Steve. And we can get into his story a little more for people who don't know it. But, you know, to be where he was sitting in 2011 and end up here in 2020 as the head coach of an ACC program is a pretty remarkable thing. In addition to meeting with John Curry, like I was told, he also was on a Zoom call with Tim Duncan and Chris Paul, like two of Wake Forest.
Okay, how do we think Tim Duncan's doing on a Zoom call situation, by the way?
I didn't ask that specifically. I just know that it was something that, you know, that John Curry was trying to connect the past with the likely future. And so that happened. And it's tremendous. I think people in the coaching profession will generally be happy for Forbes because, he's a coach's coach. He's a guy who's bounced around. Like, he's really grinded to get where he's at. And, I referenced in 2011, that, of course, is when he and everybody else at Tennessee, they got fired because of the, the infamous barbecue at Bruce Pearl's house and Bruce Pearl misleading / lying to the NCAA about it.
With Aaron Kraft, just so for people that need the memory refresher, that was the Aaron Kraft situation.
Sure. I remember back then I was hosting a trivia night on Monday Night Football.
Trivia? What? Trivia time?
I would host
trivia time.
I was way ahead of trivia time. I was actually hosting trivia nights at a local bar for Monday Night Football, and it was a disaster. But, coaches would come into Memphis to recruit, and I'd be like, I'm going to be at the bar tonight if you want to come by. And so, like, Shaka Smart came by one time, and Richard Pitino came by one time. And Forbes would come by all the time. And because he was at Tennessee at the time, they recruited Memphis. And so I remember a Monday night, Forbes was there. He was an assistant at Tennessee. And Richard Pitino was there. He was an assistant at Florida at the time, if I remember correctly. And so it's me, Forbes, and Richard hanging out. And I could just tell something was off. Like Forbes was not being his normal self. And what I subsequently found out is the following day was when Bruce Pearl was going to hold that press conference to acknowledge that he had lied to the NCAA about a impermissible visit at his home, the one involving, like you mentioned, Aaron Kraft. And that happened mid-season, and they continued to coach and do their job. And it just sort of became a bigger story seemingly every week, to the point where Tennessee, after initially insisting it was going to stand by Bruce and his staff, they decided to remove Bruce and his staff. And when Bruce gets fired, he's been making millions of dollars, and he gets like $1 million buyout. Like, he had a parachute, if you will. But the rest of that staff, Steve Forbes, Jason Shea, Tony Jones, they had been living the lifestyle that you can live when you make what they were making, $250,000, whatever it was. And then suddenly they're out of a job and they get show causes. They can't get hired at an NCAA school and they get no buyout at all. And Forbes and Shea and their families, were just scrambling, and they moved to Northwest Florida State, a junior college where they were making a fraction of what they were making at Tennessee. Like, these were hard times, relatively speaking. I remember at one point, and I hope I'm not getting too personal here, but like, Forbes didn't know if he was going to lose his house or not. In Knox, he had a nice home, and then suddenly you have no income to support that mortgage. And just a nice part of the story, when he was at Texas A&M on Billy Gillespie's staff, he also worked with Buzz Williams. Buzz Williams was on that staff as well. And Forbes had told me once that Buzz had offered to pay his mortgage. Like, if you need me to cover this until you get back on your feet, I got you. Which just sort of speaks to who Buzz Williams is as a person. But, obviously they hold it together okay. And then get the, they're at Northwest Florida State and they're doing well. And then Greg Marshall ends up with an opening on his staff after the show cause expires and ends up hiring Forbes to fill that spot. And he helps them build, Wichita State into what Wichita State became, and ultimately gets the East Tennessee State job. But to go from being fired in 2011 as an assistant coach and not knowing if you'll ever be a Division I head coach, at any level, based on what just happened, which was, by the way, no fault of his. This was a barbecue at Bruce Pearl's house involving a recruit that Bruce Pearl himself was recruiting. I'm not trying to assign blame here, but like what they actually got in trouble for, like, had nothing to do with Forbes at all. And to go from that moment to now you're a head coach in the ACC at the school where Tim Duncan and Chris Paul played, that's a pretty awesome thing. Like, I really, you know, I just couldn't, I couldn't be happier for him and his family, because there was a time where it wasn't, it seemed unlikely something like this would ever happen, you know, and for it to happen is a pretty awesome deal.
Yeah, it's, I mean, for the Wake Forest fans who are listening to this, and I'm sure there are plenty of you, you're getting a coach who carries a really strong reputation for his ability to coach in general, no doubt about it. But I think it would be reasonable to expect where Danny Manning as a person has a wonderful reputation as well. He just wasn't as out there in front. He just didn't know as many people in the college basketball media. Wake Forest wasn't winning. They just weren't relevant. They just weren't discussed much. They weren't brought up as much. That probably won't be the case with Forbes, who is a very good quote, talented coach, and figures, even though it's a tough job, no doubt about it, figures to be in position to really bring Wake back to a spot where it can be somewhat frequently in contention in the top third of the ACC, and that's not going to be an easy thing. But, and I don't know what, you know, I'm not privy to the discussions that Forbes had with athletic director John Curry. Oh, by the way, I will note that of all the candidates, Forbes was the only one with the direct tie to Curry since they both worked at Tennessee. Everyone else that was in the pool had some sort of connection in one way or another to Wake Forest, whereas Forbes, and sometimes these things can pay off down the road. When they were at Tennessee, and who knows where their lives would have gone. So this was a situation where sometimes, yes, this can actually benefit you. And I'm not saying that's why you got the job, but that was very much a thread to look at there. When you if Forbes is going to be good at Wake Forest, and if he's going to be there for 8, 10, 12 years, if you want to be excited for being a Wake Forest fan, well, take a look at the ACC right now. Okay, you've got Leonard Hamilton, north of 70, Mike Krzyzewski, north of 70, Jim Boeheim, north of 70, Mike Bray, who has told me that the contract that he is on, and I don't have the numbers in front of me, I want to say there's like 5 years left on it or something like that. He expects this to be his final contract. Now, I did tell Mike when he told me this. The coaches say this all the time. Why don't you come talk to me when there's 2 years or a year left on the deal? He laughed, admitted that might be the case, but still could be on his way out. Jim Larrañaga, north of 70 as well. Boston College is going to have a reboot there. And then just because of the way these things go, let's look up 3 years from now. Wouldn't surprise me if we were to see, you know, potentially Georgia Tech have a coaching change. If we were to see Clemson potentially have a coaching change. The point I'm getting at is fast forward to 2024, 2025, you could have more than half of the ACC in new coaching situations, and plenty of those coaching situations could be significant challenges. Not to say that, like, once Mike Krzyzewski leaves Duke, that Duke can't still be a top 10 program. Of course, it still can, but we got to see how that's going to look. So if you get Forbes now, take 1 or 2 years to really build it up, then you get some momentum going by 2023, 2024, and you got Wake Forest operating as a top five, top six program in the ACC, then you can really create something of a foothold there. So just keep that in mind going forward. There's a lot of reason for optimism within the league, even though it's a stacked coaching league, and this is not going to be easy. Wake Forest opts to decide to hire the guy who has been incredibly successful. I mean, although East Tennessee State didn't play in the NCAA tournament because there was no NCAA tournament this season, ETSU did win the auto bid out of the SoCon. They actually had the benefit of finishing their postseason schedule as a conference before the season was halted on March 12th. So he does have two auto bids to the tournament to his name in the past five seasons, and the 30 wins were the second most in the sport last season, only to Gonzaga's 31 GP. So yeah, he's got a very interesting story, and I think you laid out effectively what he's gone through, and the fact that he's now landed here as the head coach at Wake Forest is certainly a great turnaround. And those who knew him, particularly, you know, you're talking 2008, 2010, 2012, to see where he is now, yes, it is absolutely a success story. And you know, not that it's totally uncommon, and this is to a lesser extent, but it kind of reminds me of Rob Senderoff, who's been the head coach at Kent State, who was on Kelvin Sampson's staff at Indiana, and he was hit with the show cause, and he was, you know, blacklisted. It might be a little too tough of a term, but he was out of the sport for a number of years. Didn't wind up impacting him ultimately because he was able to get back in the game, has been able to be a successful coach at Kent State as well. And so it's nice to see every so often when you have a coach that gets caught in the crosshairs and through circumstances beyond their control, sensibility went out, character went out, you know, track record went out. So like Senderoff at Kent State, Forbes now at Wake Forest, it's a great comeback story.
Another reason to be encouraged if you're a Wake Forest fan is that sometimes when you hire a quote-unquote mid-major coach, you're hiring somebody to suddenly do a job unlike anything they've ever done. Like they're going to be recruiting in a totally different – on a totally different aisle. With Forbes, it's just not true. Like I mentioned, he's recruited at the highest level at Tennessee, at Texas A&M. You know, he was bringing a top 100 – at least one top 100 prospect to Wichita State when that wasn't a normal thing. So he won't have to learn how to recruit at the highest level of the sport. He has spent much of his career recruiting at the highest level of the sport. So that should be an easy transition. I've had a couple, and we touched on this on a previous podcast, I guess on Saturday when the Wake Forest job opened, a couple of people asked me, hey, if you're Forbes, would you have done this? Like, would you have taken Wake Forest or waited for something else? And I do think it's a reasonable question to ask. Like, he'd have probably been a better fit at Clemson. Like, do you wait and see if Clemson opens after next season?
Yeah.
He's from Iowa. You know, Iowa State fans aren't thrilled with the program in its current state. Do you wait and see if Iowa State opens after next season? Like, he would have been in play for both of those jobs if they did open. And in the meantime, East Tennessee State, I don't know if they're going to win 30 games again, but they're going to be really, really good again. So it's possible you could have, said, yeah, let's wait and see if something better opens. Essentially what Dan Hurley did a few years back. Like, he's offered Rutgers and decided, I'll just stay at Rhode Island and trust that I'll be good again and a better job will open. And then, of course, a better job opens, it's UConn, and he gets that job. So there's some thought that maybe he could have been a little more patient, but I guess I would just say at the age of 50, you're always one torn ACL away from your season going the wrong way. It's one 19-year-old making an incredibly poor decision that for whatever reason reflects badly on you and can hinder your ability to get a big time job. It's just, I don't know, bird in a hand type thing. I think if you're 50 years old and you were fired 9 years ago, if suddenly you're offered a ACC job, you know, making an excess of $1 million a year, you just have to I think you got to take that, right?
Yes, you do. You're right. And listen, ETSU should be good again. And frankly, you know, if you look at another coach who was, you know, up for the job, you know, Wes Miller gets that benefit now in that, you know, he's got a player, Isaiah Miller, who's looking at, you know, he's testing the waters, but I don't think there's really any chance that's going to happen. I think that Isaiah Miller will return. And so with that, you know, UNC Greensboro has its strongest, most talented team on paper returning next season. And this is coming off a 23-win season where, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if we're talking next year. And you know, I'm not listen, Brad Brownell has a great season. They should keep him. Brad Brownell has an amazing reputation as a human being. But just to use your example of Clemson, if that's open, like this is very much the situation where you've got a good team anyway. So you return to a familiar spot. You can win big again and still have opportunities. So as where Forbes did the right, I would take this, particularly if you can win big at Wake Forest. Again, we talked about a couple podcasts ago, Dave Odom is the most successful coach in the history of that program, and it's because of a mere 6-season run and, of course, bringing in one of the 5 to 10 best college players of the past 30 years as well, having part of the program there with Duncan. So Forbes makes the right move there, but just because other guys didn't get it doesn't mean that you can't have opportunities there as well. I did want to bring up something, GP. Mm. It started after we started the podcast, but we'll talk about it now because we talked about this offline, and now Goodman has put it out there, Jeff Goodman. He says, sources, Wake Forest believes it does not have to pay Danny Manning the $15 million he had on his existing deal because he failed to meet certain criteria. Been told Wake feels it owes Manning less than half the $15 million. The two sides could wind up going to court or settling. Two thoughts and a question for you. First thought on all this was when you brought it up was this – reminds me of the Kevin Ollie versus UConn situation. It's not a direct parallel because UConn also had NCAA issues, and so that was a lot of what it was dealt with. That stuff hasn't even that hasn't been finalized, by the way. But it's a brutal situation with an alumnus in UConn and a severing that I honestly don't think can ever be fixed and will have impacts on some of the high-profile alumni to come out of UConn. This is similar in that you've got a school that has fired a coach. And under circumstances from the outside looking in appear to be flimsy, but still going to say we don't have to try and pay you. The other thought I had was, okay, this also goes a long way to explaining why we waited until the end of April and John Curry made this move, because clearly he, the president, and any of the other power players at Wake Forest must have had discussions saying, okay, we know we need to make a change with our program. And if we do that, it's not like we absolutely can't afford the buyout if we have to have it. Clearly they can. They wouldn't do this without that option. But is there a real case to be made? Obviously, at this point, Parrish, they think there is. And this is the ugly part of stuff. Because you know what? Danny Manning, rightfully so, is going to want his damn money. And he may well damn get it. Because when you look at the history of this, like Kansas and his coach, Beatty, I think, went through this. And I want to say Pitt and Kevin Stallings also kind of got involved in this. Just your quick thoughts, since now it's been put out there and we can kind of discuss it above the table, if you will, about what will probably be a legal battle that will go on for the better part of a year now between Wake Forest and Danny Manning.
Yeah, you and I talked about this yesterday offline. I was told, I guess, Monday that Wake was going to try to not pay Danny the full buyout. My understanding is that they went to him weeks ago and, you know, basically said, I'm not saying this is the exact number, but it was a number like this, like, we'll give you $6 million to settle. And he said no. And they said, well, then more or less, you're going to have to fight us in court for the rest of your money because we are going to fire you for cause. And he says, oh, well, then we'll just end up in court. You know, like, if I got to spend $200,000 on lawyers to get an extra $9 million, mm-hmm. Well, then that's what I'm going to do. And so, yeah, this is going to be a situation that ends up in court, or they will settle for more than what was initially offered. Listen, without knowing the details, I'm reluctant to comment on what who's right and who's wrong here. I will say that with the Kevin Ollie situation, I think UConn's fundamentally wrong. Like this is the same school that employed Jim Calhoun, for crying out loud. You can't act like now suddenly you can't have a person like Kevin Ollie run your program. And I say that with all due respect to Jim, but like, get out of my face with this, right? Yeah. Like, the school that employed Jim Calhoun is trying to fire Kevin Ollie for cause for what is, relatively speaking, minor violations. Like, come on, pay the guy. Listen, Kevin Ollie turned out to be a unsuccessful basketball coach after winning a national championship. I understand why you wanted to make a move, but like, you owe him the money. You gave him the contract. You owe him the money. With this one, I frankly don't know what it is they're alleging Danny did to not meet the standards of his contract. But I will say that if it's small stuff like what UConn alleged as it related to Kevin Ollie, my opinion would be the same. That like, listen, this is not the reason you fired a basketball coach. Let's be honest. Unless there's something really big out there that we don't know about, Wake Forest fired a basketball coach for the same reasons most schools fire basketball coaches, because the guy wasn't winning enough. That's why Danny Manning was fired. And so if there's something else there that gives them a legal path to not paying the buyout, well, then congratulations, you got lucky. But if they're just trying to nitpick little words in a contract to get out of this, or or threatening, or just like using the attempt at making him fight for his money in an mm-hmm. attempt to get him to settle for less money. Like I think all of that's poor form, if that is what's going on.
Yeah, I think it's small. I think it's petty, and I don't think that. Listen, again, with the obvious stipulation that unless there is something very significant here, or short of the two parties.
Here's the way I would put it. Unless there's something there that would cause you to fire Danny Manning, even if Danny Manning just made three straight NCAA tournaments. Mm. I think you're in the wrong.
Right. And barring the absolute almost 0% chance that Danny Manning and his lawyer or lawyers say, you know what, okay, let's just split for $10 million and avoid all this. I just don't think that's going to happen either. Wake Forest is ultimately going to have to wind up paying north of $15 million buyout over the course of 5 years. By the way, we can kind of put a bow on this podcast, if you will. Don't have the figures yet for Forbes. And it's a private school, so they won't disclose the salary. But I'd say that Forbes to Wake is probably going to be about 1.5 annually, somewhere in that ballpark. And the situation that's going to play out at Wake Forest for the next 5 years is that Wake Forest will be paying Danny Manning approximately or in the neighborhood of twice the salary annually of the man who's actually coaching his program. That's why Ron Wellman, in part, is no longer the athletic director at the school. He was the one responsible for that hiring and that contract, and it serves as a lesson to really any AD out there. Hey, if the agents want to get it done, they can go ahead and get it done. But for the most part, this should be a warning sign. I mean, beyond anything else, I think that's what we should remember. But shouts to Rick Smith and Dan Ivaloff, who have represented Manning for his entire career, and getting that done. I can't see any way in which they don't allow this ultimately to get paid back to Manning. I don't think Wake has a leg to stand on, but that will be something to keep track of going forward, because it wouldn't surprise me if we wound up going to court.
If the number is 1.5 million on average, if it's a 5-year contract, that's $7.5 million guaranteed. Again, just to circle back to the initial point, to go from being fired as an assistant coach in 2011 to signing a contract in 2020 worth $7.5 million to be the head coach at an ACC school where Tim Duncan used to play is a pretty awesome deal. So shouts to Steve Forbes, and shouts to Devin Downey, of course. Shouts to Chester, South Carolina. Shouts to Kathleen from Chester, South Carolina.
I saw this. Wait a second. Well, we can wrap. But I saw that I was doing a little bit of work. I saw the tweet you're referring to, a tweet you had. Who is this person, and how have we discovered that she's from South Carolina?
Like last night, my wife, this is weird to me. She will watch any episode of anything with no context for the show.
I can't do it.
I cannot do it. So, like, she will, like, the Better Call Saul season finale, she doesn't watch Better Call Saul, but she watched it with me and, like, enjoyed it. She has no idea what's going on, who's who. She just has a unique ability to just mindlessly watch whatever's on television. She's fine with it. So last night, she's sitting on the couch, and she goes, well, come sit down with me. And I said, well, what are you watching? She's like, I don't know. She never knows what she's watching. I said, I clicked the info thing, and it was Chicago Fire. I've never watched Chicago Fire. And so she's watching Chicago Fire. And it comes back from commercial, and I'm just sort of – I don't want to watch this, but I also – like my wife asked me to sit down, so I'm trying to be a good husband, right, in the middle of a pandemic. So I sit down, and I'm like, okay, I'll just watch this for a few minutes, and then I'll invent a reason that I have to get up, and then I can go upstairs and have a drink. So I'm sitting there, and I'm watching Chicago Fire, and oddly, like it's a pretty interesting little scene that's going on here. So I don't know what it's about or who these people are, but I'm watching it, right? And then it goes to commercial, and a cricket commercial comes on. And I'm just watching a cricket commercial, cell phone service. And the first person in the commercial, it's got like all these customers. It's like Matt from, you know, wherever, and Gary from Hernando. And it says Kathleen from Chester, South Carolina. And I get weirdly
Emotional?
Excited.
Oh, okay. Okay. Weirdly excited. Yes.
Yeah. And I hit pause on the thing, and I back it up, and I'm like, I got it. Because they don't say Chester, South Carolina. It's just on the screen, just in small print.
You were locked in on this commercial, man.
I'm like, okay. I'm like, did I see this right? And so I back up, and I see it, and then I back it up again. I'm trying to pause, and my wife is like, what are you doing? And I said, this
ooh, la, la.
From Chester, South Carolina. and she's like, why does that matter? And I said, you don't listen to the podcast.
Does not listen. No 5-star review. Come said, on, Kelly.
I said, Kelly, I will tweet this and thousands of people will smile and know exactly what I'm talking about. And you have no idea why that's important to me, do you? And she said, and I said, I'm not watching Chicago Fire. I'm going upstairs. So that was my out. Her total lack of respect for Chester, South Carolina was my reason to not have to watch Chicago Fire.
It's disrespectful, okay? It's disrespectful.
Totally disrespectful.
listen, we occasionally, once we are allowed to, you know, travel again with a sense of real freedom and personal safety, you know, we'll obviously do the podcast here and there. But what I'm getting at is we have never done a specific podcast dedicated to a location. It genuinely now means something to me that we have to record an actual podcast in the hamlet of Chester, South Carolina at some point. I don't know when it can happen. All I know is that it needs to happen, and we will somehow try to make it happen. Presumably around, by the way, a peach jam situation, because it's relatively drivable from there. So this just your little your little television encounter reminded me that when sunnier days are ahead, at some point the Chester, South Carolina podcast has to happen. It probably has to be like a 3-hour podcast. So we'll make it happen.
And then whenever they retire Devin Downey's number at South Carolina, yes, we're going to go to that.
That like, without a doubt.
Yeah. We're 100% going to South Carolina, even though Devin Downey likely has no idea who we are.
I think.
No, at this point, there's no way for him to not. People tweet him and
yeah, he's
like,
got it
all the time. We're in his Wikipedia page for crying
love
out
loud. Love it. Devin Downey. Yeah.
Shouts to Devin Downey. Shouts to Chester, South Carolina. Shouts to Kathleen from Chester, South Carolina. Shouts to Terry, MF at Teagle. Legend, Chester Larnell. Please go subscribe to the Ion College Basketball Podcast via Apple Podcasts. Rated favorably, 5 stars, nice comments. That's all I've ever asked. And we will talk to you again real soon. Till then, take care.
If you want to win your fantasy football league, it starts right now. The offseason is the best time to get ahead of the competition. We'll help you win your league on the Fantasy Football Today podcast, part of CBS Sports Podcast Network. Fantasy Football Today has 3 episodes every week following the latest news, giving you early rankings, early sleepers, breakouts, and busts. So if you're a dedicated fantasy football manager, check out the most dedicated podcast, Fantasy Football Today. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere podcasts are found.